Hi, and welcome to the Well Read Podcast, a bi-weekly discussion on books and reading. I'm Hallie.
And I'm Anne.
And we are librarians with the Beaufort County Library in South Carolina. And this week we are going to be discussing reading out of our comfort zones. And if you listened to our little teaser episode last week, you heard that Anne and I assigned each other some books to read outside of our comfort zone. Anne, do you want to talk a little bit about how we set this up and why we think it's important?
I think we just thought it sounded like a fun project. Uh-huh. And I think we really quickly came up with things to assign each other. It wasn't like there wasn't really thought behind it. It was just we were on Facebook and I'm like, I'm going to give you this and this. And then we kind of ran with it. So I we've talked about how we really appreciate being in book clubs and in situations where we have to read things that we wouldn't normally think as being our genres of choice, and that you often find things that you really love and it's a surprise to you, and how exciting that is as a reader. And I think especially for us who read really widely professionally, that it's there's something just really neat about reading something that you wouldn't pick up on your own. We love it when other people do that, and we wanted to sort of show what can happen when we do it to ourselves.
Right. And so, and I liked it because I trust that you know me and you know what I like. So you weren't going to pick something that was way too out of my comfort zone that would make me completely uncomfortable. You know, that you were going to try to pick something that would appeal to me. Like you're going to try to find an example of something that was out of my comfort zone.
You may be giving me too much credit. Right, I mean, well, I didn't pick something that I thought Hallie's going to hate this. This is going to be awesome. But I also knew what you don't read. Right. And so I don't know that I really thought, I think Hallie will love this. She just doesn't know it yet. Yes. I think I was thinking, let's see what happens with this.
Yeah, I guess that's sort of what I thought with you too. I just thought, let's expose her to something and see what she thinks. And so I'm prepared for you liking or hating what I gave you. And then so what we did is, if you didn't listen, Anne and I each gave each other two books that were out of our comfort zones to read. And then we each chose a third on our own that was out of our comfort zone. And I thought it was a really good exercise. In fact,
it
sort of
fun.
Went along with my whole reading resolution of trying to diversify my reading.
Right.
And I kind of want to do it often.
I know.
I really do. Somebody, one of my friends commented on our Facebook, our brand new Facebook page, which we'll talk about in a little bit, that she thought it was such a good idea. And she's a friend of mine from graduate school. Mm-hmm. And I was like, you should pick one for me too. You know, I want everybody to pick books for me now, because it was just such a good exercise to get out of what I would pick for myself and what somebody else thinks I should read.
Right. Well, and as I was doing this, I thought of like four more genres that I just don't do anything with. And so we can explore those in the future. I think that urban fantasy has my name all over it in the future.
Yes. Yeah. I have a few that could definitely fall into this out of my comfort zone read.
Yay.
All right. Should we dive in and talk about the books that we read?
Okay.
All right. Go first.
So my first book is Match Me If You Can by Susan Elizabeth Phillips, and this is one that you picked for me.
Yes.
And so we sort of agreed beforehand that we would talk about why these books are not in our comfort zone. So the reason I consider this kind of contemporary romance slash chick lit, they have elements of both, and that's usually not my thing, because even though I know it's supposed to be cute and fluffy, I think it can potentially create really unrealistic expectations for relationships, and particularly in how men behave in relationships. So I always hear the argument when I explain that to people, that people know that, or readers know that these are meant to be exaggerated and that it's just kind of light and fluffy. But I've had too many roommates with super unrealistic expectations and kind of use the, if he loved me, he'd treat me like this character argument. And I've fallen into that myself. And I think it's really hard for women to not fall into that, because we're bombarded with that message all the time. So I really have a hard time separating the intention of the book with what I see as the potential outcome.
Okay.
So that's really, really difficult for me.
Okay.
But to be fair, I also don't watch romantic comedies for the same reason, because I just yell at the screen the whole time. So it's just sort of across the board for me. The synopsis of this book is, it's about a woman named Annabelle Granger who has taken over her grandmother's Chicago matchmaking business, and she's trying to take it into the 21st century by focusing less on widowed seniors and more on hot young professionals that are too busy to date themselves and to set up these relationships. So she needs to land this impressive first client so that she can legitimize herself in the matchmaking world. But she has stiff competition from the top matchmaker in the city, who is named Portia Powers. So, yes. So Annabelle herself is recovering from a broken engagement and is considered a hopeless cause by her very ambitious and overachieving family, while Portia is ruthless and disciplined and just kind of this ice queen. And they're both hired by Heath Champion, who is the best sports agent in the country. With a name like that, he has no other choice. And so he seems to have everything you could want in life. He has looks, he has wealth, he has celebrity friends, but now he feels like he needs to find a wife so that he can have the ultimate status symbol. And I definitely wanted to read the book, and I definitely looked forward to reading it, and I was always entertained by it. So I can't say I didn't enjoy it. I did enjoy it, but I still found parts of it frustrating, as I knew I would. So I had a hard time with the way Heath talked about women, and I know that's meant to show how he progresses through the story, where he starts out very insistent that they fit certain criteria and is very cruel about that in certain ways. But I've seen too many guys, and I've known too many guys that have talked about women that way and have very strong entitlement feelings towards women. And so that language is always really hard for me to hear, even for entertainment purposes. And I'm not crazy about portrayals of women as hot messes when men are cool and collected. That's just not a trope that I enjoy at all. So I know it's meant to be relatable, but it just doesn't really work for me. But all of those things happened in the beginning of the book. And so once I got past them, I was really kind of along for the ride and good. And then there were just these random things that would happen that would really take me out of it. Like, there was a part where a man talks about controlling a woman with a hypothetical dog collar. And I was like, I was like, Hallie would never be for this. So I knew you'd forgotten that by as soon as I read it. And she's like really excited by that. And that really bothered me. So there's just little things that took me out of it enough to make it so that I couldn't quite just go along for the ride. So I totally, totally get why this genre is popular. And I know that they're meant to be light and fun, and they can be very sweet. Mm-hmm. And I know that most women that read this are finding great things about it and are just able to go along for the ride. Mm-hmm. But for me, I can never quite suspend my disbelief and just go with it. Mm-hmm. So I'm sorry.
No, it wasn't my favorite. I'm glad you read it. I'm glad you tried it. I think that I really did debate about what I wanted to do, a contemporary romance and a historical romance, mm-hmm. to kind of give you both perspectives. And there was another author that I was really debating about whether to give you, the other author, or Susan Elizabeth Phillips, because the other author definitely falls more in chick lit mm-hmm. territory than romance territory. Mm-hmm. But I thought Susan Elizabeth Phillips is very well known mm-hmm. in romance world and well known for contemporary. So I thought I would give you somebody that's sort of the pinnacle of that, because I talked about this, I think in our favorites of the year, I talked about one of the Susan Elizabeth Phillips books. There are a lot of issues like with Susan. I love her books. The ones that I've, not all of them, I shouldn't say that. The ones I've read that I've liked, I really loved. Like, I just kind of get into them.
Your ratings mm-hmm,
and they go kind of back and forth. Yeah, because I agree that there are some things, particularly her portrayal of women sometimes, mm-hmm. like the hot mess thing, that kind of gets to me too. Like, why can't they be put together and still fall in love? You know what I mean? Like, why do they have to kind of be a hot mess? So I do see where you have issues with it. But for me, those I can gloss over for mm-hmm. the entertainment of it. And I understand why that would be something that would pull you too much out of the story to ever commit to, like, really being entertained by it. So I'm not offended at all that you didn't like it.
That makes me feel better. And I know there are plenty of other things where my, maybe these same issues come up where I am able to gloss over mm-hmm. it, but for some reason with chick lit and romance, it's just really hard for me. But I think, again, that's because I've seen so many mm-hmm. friends cling to these ideas that they get from these and not be able to have, like, get rid of good guys because they don't do certain things that they think guys should do in that they see in these kinds of books and these kinds of movies. So it's just really, maybe if I had different dating experiences mm-hmm. in my own life and different my friends had different experiences, I'd be better able to just push them away and be okay with it. But unfortunately, it's always in the back of my head.
I understand. All right. Well, my first one is one you assigned to me. It's A Peach of a Murder by L.J. Washburn. This is a cozy mystery. It's the first of a series. And I don't really know. This is out of my comfort zone in a way because I don't read these really, but not in, like, that I'm uncomfortable with them, you know? Right. So that's, I guess, a distinction I want to make sure to make because they're just not something I'm really drawn towards. Mm-hmm. I don't know why. They're almost too sweet. First of all, I find it kind of unbelievable that, like, all these crimes happen in a place, in typically places that are, like, really quiet, calm, you know, small towns, and then these crazy crimes happen in this amateur investigator is able to solve the crime. So I think that's part of why I just don't gravitate.
The amateur investigator part is the best.
I know. So I think that's why I don't gravitate towards that. But I was glad that you gave it to me so I could give it a shot. This is about a woman named Phyllis Newsom, who is a retired school teacher, and she lives a contented life with several of her friends in a house. And it's sort of, I saw several reviews, many reviews, that refer to it as Golden Girls. Because it kind of is. It's like all these retired older women. They live in a house
like
together.
All school teachers.
And they're all school teachers, And they're all retired now. And they live in a small town. And they have this nice life. And every year the town has a peach festival. And there's a contest, like a peach baking contest. It's not even a peach pie contest. It's
like a recipe contest.
Yeah. And so you make something having to do with peaches and submit it. And Phyllis always loses to her frenemy, Carolyn, who also lives with her. So that was something that was kind of funny to me, like that they were kind of enemies, but they lived together. And so that was just, I mean, it was a cute part of the story. Mm-hmm. And so this is, Carolyn is her rival baker. And this year, Phyllis is convinced that she's going to win. Like, she's determined that she has a special peach recipe that she's going to make. So then she's out picking peaches one day, and the owner of the orchard turns up dead while she's there. So she's right in the midst of this. They don't even know if it's a crime. It's a death at first. Then, right after that, she goes and she makes her dish for the contest, and she serves it to the judges. And right after she serves it to the judges, one of the judges keels over and dies. So she's right in the middle of these deaths, and they seem unrelated. Like, the two people that have died seem very disparate people. Like, there's no connection there. And so, of course, Phyllis is drawn into trying to figure out how they're connected and who was responsible, because she feels responsible because she's the one who served the one judge, I think it's a pie that she serves him, that he dies. Okay, so that's about all I'm gonna say about the story. I will say the killer was actually a surprise.
It was.
It was not.
I totally agree.
It was not apparent who the killer was. I thought it was very sweet. Like, it was a very sweet story. I was never totally captivated by it. Mm-hmm. I just sort of was like, well, this is a pleasant way to pass the time. But with all of the many books out there, I don't know that I would go and pick up the second one in the series. Yeah. Like, I don't know if it's the way I want to spend my reading time. I understand, like you just said with Susan Elizabeth Phillips, I understand why there is an audience for this. It's a very cozy. I mean, these are called cozy mysteries, and they're very cozy. The crimes never seem horrifying. Right. They're never going to get under your skin of like, I can't believe this happened. I just finished watching Making a Murderer, and like, all I can think about is that TV show. And so it's not that. It's not going to keep you up at night thinking that these bad things happen in the world. So it's a very safe sort of mystery to read. And you know, I enjoyed it. It was a fun way to spend. It's relatively short. It was not a lengthy book. And so it was a fun way to spend a few hours while I read it. I just don't know that I'll go and pick up the second in the series, but I'm not opposed to trying maybe other cozy mysteries. I don't think I ever really connected with the retired characters and that. There's kind of a little bit of a love story that starts up. And so that was, you know, me. I like romance.
Yeah.
And so I liked that portion of it. I just don't know that I would continue on with the series, but I enjoyed reading it.
Yeah, I was talking to my sister last night about this episode, and she and I kind of have always thought of myself as not liking sweet things and being sort of too, I don't know the right word for it, not abrasive, but just kind of rolling my eyes at it. And she said, no, you do like those things. You just like it in a different form. Right. You don't like it in romance form. You like it in cozy mystery form. Exactly. And so it's the same appeal factors are coming into that, of having something be kind of light and airy and sweet and a little bit cute.
Right.
That's
right. It's like charming.
Yeah, charming. Yeah. That's a great way of putting it.
Well, one of the things that, or one of the criticisms of romances is that they're formulaic. And they are. I mean, that's part of definition of a romance, is that it has a happily ever after. And it's not the what you're getting to, it's how you're getting there.
Right.
But I would say the same thing about something like this. I mean, it's not, you know that the killer is going to be revealed at the end. Like I said, it was a surprise actually who the killer was, but it's not a surprise that they're going to start with these people who have nothing to do with law enforcement or anything, and they live their lives, and then they stumble upon crimes, they get involved in the investigations, and then at the end it's wrapped up fairly happily.
Right.
So,
and there's some eccentric characters along the way that they'll meet. Yeah, it's the same story every time. So,
anyway, so I can see, I can obviously see the appeal, because I see, you know, I'm a fan of romances. I see the appeal of knowing exactly what you get when you're going to pick up one of these books. It's the same with like Janet Ivanovich or something.
Exactly.
Like that.
Incidentally, I made the recipe
that
they had for this.
It's like chili pepper.
It was ginger. It didn't have any ginger flavor. It was a good peach cobbler, but it didn't taste like ginger, which was kind of hilarious, because that's the whole point of her making this thing. So Anyway, maybe I just needed to up my ginger a lot.
More ginger.
That's always the answer to everything is more ginger.
I'm always about more spice.
Yes.
More flavor. Okay.
Okay. Up next, I am going to talk about the book that I picked for myself, which is Mistborn, The Final Empire by Brandon Sanderson. And I picked this because when I think of a genre I want to avoid, it is epic sci-fi and fantasy, which I think we've mentioned several times on this podcast. Or maybe that's the first. I know that's not the first. So even looking at the covers just make me cringe. When I was deciding what book to read, I was going through Goodreads and I kept going, every time I would find a new cover because I just hated them so much. This is out loud at the desk when I'm researching this. So then I started to look more at Goodreads, and I was actually surprised at how much fantasy I read. I read a lot of it, and Half a King by Joe Abercrombie was one of my favorite books of last year. So, and that's very epic fantasy. So I know that there are books out there that work for me, and I wondered if I just had a bad experience in the past. And so I started to think about why I feel this way, and it's really based on an impression I have from experiences of talking to super fans who wanted to tell me why I didn't understand why fantasy was so great, and then recount the entire plot in detail, which is always hyper complicated and takes too long to explain. And I've had so many of those experiences, so I just have avoided it. But I know that Brandon Sanderson is considered one of the best writers of this genre. The plot is about a supreme leader named the Lord Ruler, who is immortal, and he is ruling over a world that's covered with ash and mist, and society is broken up into a small noble ruling class and then a large serf population, which is called Ska. And as I'm trying to explain this, I'm just getting bored. So let me try. So out of the kind of the mists of this society comes a former prisoner named Kelsier, who decides to stage a revolt to overthrow the Lord Ruler. And Kelsier uses magic called allomancy, which allows a person to gain power by swallowing different metals to gain specific powers based on the type of metal. And there are lots of allomancers out there, but they normally can only swallow one type of metal. But Kelsier is a Mistborn, and so he can utilize all these different metals together. So he organizes a group of allomancers, and this includes another Mistborn that he meets named Vin, and they decide to stage this uprising, and that they'll find out the secret of what keeps the Lord Ruler in power. So even just describing that little bit, it bored me so much. And I felt like I was talking like I had to hear people tell when people would describe these plots to me, when they're like, and you have to understand this and this and this about this world. Oh, it drives me nuts. I hated this. I absolutely hated this. I wish I could say that I tried to get through it. I didn't. I quit. I couldn't do it anymore. So I think that in theory, the writing is good. And I know that for people that enjoy this type of book, this is a really, really good quality version of it. And this is something that has great world building. I know lots of people that adore this series and adore this author, and they consider it more of a caper book that's sort of wrapped in this fantasy clothing. For me, I hated reading every minute of it. I found myself having to reread every paragraph multiple times because I'd get bored in the middle of it. And it just, I couldn't do it. And I tried to think about whether it was the density of it, but I like other really dense books. So I think that just the combination of density plus fantasy, it just was too much for me. And I have other ways I want to spend my reading time. So I'm sorry. I wish I had been able to try. No, but at least I know. Right. And I know that that this is something that just isn't my thing. Right. And I'm sure that there are maybe some other books that are less dense than this one, like Half a King, that are the same idea behind them that I can read and enjoy, but something with that specific type of epic fantasy I just can't do. So
was this a teen book or an adult book?
I think it's adult.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure this is an adult series, but I know a lot of people have read it as teens. Mm-hmm. So, but a lot of YA fantasy just, there isn't that word density in it. Yeah. The page is pretty, there's a lot of white space on the page, and this is not case. So, oh well.
All right, you tried.
Yeah.
So my next one is another one you picked for me. It's Sworn to Silence by Linda Castillo. This is also the first in a series. It's a mystery series, and it's a police procedural, which I don't ordinarily read.
Right.
And I've got to say, when I started, I was not sure I was going to make it through. The first opening scene are very graphic descriptions of a man torturing a woman and killing her. And that is my kryptonite. I mean, right. I do not do well with any, that's why I stay away from this sort of genre. I don't like it in TV. I don't like it in movies. I don't like it in books. I don't like bringing that sort of darkness into my life. Like I have this philosophy, I guess you would say, like, I don't need, there's plenty of that in the world that you hear about anyway. I don't necessarily need to bring it into my life as entertainment.
You know that it happens.
Right. It does. Like, right. Exactly.
Trying to pretend it actually happens. You just don't want to have it in your face.
Right. Exactly. Totally so understand. I read the second after I read the first cozy. And like I said about the first one that I read, it was very sweet. It was pleasant to read. There was nothing offensive about it. And I opened this book and I was like, oh, Anne, what did you do to me? But I trusted that I had to give it a fair shot. So I was actually very pleased that I ended up reading it, because once I was able to get past that, and I'll be honest, I basically skimmed the scenes that had anything that were descriptive passages like that. It was a really good story and it was a really good mystery. And it's about a woman named Kate Burkholder, who is a police chief. And she grew up in a small town in Ohio, and it's about 5,000 people, and I think they say a quarter or a third of the population is Amish. Mm-hmm. And she grew up Amish, but then left the religion after her Rumspringa and went to Columbus, which is where I'm from, so I like that connection, and became a cop eventually. She had a couple of steps before she became a police officer, but she became a police officer in Columbus, and she's now been back in this small town for a few years as the police chief, and that's causing some issues in the town because she's a woman, she's young, she doesn't have a ton of experience, but because of her Amish background, she's kind of a bridge between the Amish and the English, what they call non-Amish people. Mm-hmm. Typically, after this gruesome first scene, you get the impression that the most action that the police department sees is like clearing out cows from the road that have escaped the farm. So not a whole lot happening here. And then there's this gruesome murder. And when Kate finds the body, or when she's part of the investigation, it seems like the handiwork of a serial killer that last struck in the same town 16 years before when Kate was there, and she has an involvement in that. I don't want to say too much because I can't recall how far into the book you learn exactly what the involvement is, but she does have a connection, and so she doesn't want to reveal too much about her connection, and she's trying to solve these crimes, and it becomes apparent that it is a serial killer. It's not just a one-time thing. So as I said, very gruesome and grisly descriptions of torture and killing of these women. I skipped over it, and I didn't think the story was less for having skipped over those parts. And I didn't skip over them completely, but I mean, I got the gist. I got the idea of what was happening and moved right on. Right. Again, the killer was a surprise. I really enjoyed reading about the community, about the Amish, the way of lives. There was a great deal of respect, I thought, in the way she portrayed them. There were some interesting facts just about the way they led life that I wasn't aware of. And I really couldn't stop reading. Like, this was a book that once I started, I kept turning the pages, staying up too late to read it to find out what happened next. I am going to try the next one in the series, I think. Anne and I talked about this before the show. If the crimes are as brutally described as in this one, I don't know that I would stick with the series. Right. Like I said, I don't know that I want to consistently bring that sort of darkness into my life, but I really enjoyed it. I found it very engaging. Yeah. I should say, I don't know if enjoy is the right word, but I really found it very compelling and interesting. I liked the way she wrote the characters. I liked the way she wrote the story. And I realized, as I talked about this, we have not repeated the titles at the end of our discussion of any of these books. But okay, so it was good. It was a good little experiment. I'm glad I read it. I will try the next one. It's Sworn to Silence by Linda Castillo.
That's one. I have the same issues. I really try to avoid violence in what I read and see because it sticks with me and I have a really hard time with it. So I actually read this book because a patron requested it as one of our book club books. Mm-hmm. And I went into it not really knowing anything, and I had a really hard time reading it just like you did. Mm-hmm. But I also thought it was so good. I never have read a second one because I just felt like I couldn't handle the violence in it. But the scenario that we're seeing of this woman who used to be a part of this community, who's now in a completely different capacity, but still very involved, was just so compelling and so interesting. And so I thought that you would find it as interesting as I did, but I wasn't sure how you would deal with the violence. So
yeah, it was. I'm glad I read it. Like, I really, the positives outweighed that violence portion for me, for sure, because I found like it's a very small police force, so you kind of get to know all the people on the police force pretty well, and they all have distinct personalities. I really thought it was very well done. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I really, and she was a new author to me. I hadn't read her before, so
yay,
it was a good one.
Success.
Yes. All right, what's your last one?
My last book is 9 Rules to Break When Romancing a Rake by Sarah McLean. This is the book that made me laugh uncontrollably when Hallie told me about it. Because how can you not with a title like that?
I love her title. Love a good pun.
So, like I said, this is Hallie's choice. This is her last choice for me to read. And I normally don't read romance for kind of the same reasons that I haven't read contemporary romance and chick lit, that I just have a hard time getting past the unrealistic expectations it can set up for men and women. I'm not really into reading sex scenes, so that's not an appeal for me. So in my defense for feeling like romance novels are not the greatest, I've actually read many of them. And I did this when I was a teenager. My best friend was really into reading romance novels, and she told me that I couldn't tease her about them unless I read some of them myself, which is totally fair and right for her. So the ones she picked for me were horrible. So they had horrible setups. The writing was so funny to me. But I also found them kind of degrading to women, and I didn't like the male savior aspect to them, and that was just really troubling to me. So I just never went back to them. So I know you picked this for me to show me the potential of what a romance novel could be. So it's about a woman named Lydia Calpurnia Hartwell, and she lives in Regency London, which, if you don't know, means early 19th century England. And she's considered a plain, boring spinster. And she's always done what's been expected of her by her family and by society. And she decides that since she's 28 in the book, she decides that since she has no hope of marriage, she might as well do whatever she wants and finally enjoy her life. So she creates a list of things that she could do without judgment if she were a man. And this starts with a passionate kiss. So she has always had a crush on the notorious bad boy Gabriel, the Marquis of Ralston. And she arrives unannounced at his house in the middle of the night to steal her first kiss from him. And this begins a series of adventures, which include visiting a tavern, drinking scotch, firing a pistol, and somehow Gabriel always gets involved with these with very amorous consequences. And yes, there is a lot of sex in this book.
It is very steamy.
Yes, it is. But you can always see it coming a mile away. Mm-hmm. So it's easily skipped or skimmed if it's not your thing, mm-hmm. which is a lot of what I did. But romance novel language is so ridiculous when it comes to the sex scenes that the parts I did read were actually really funny to me, which probably wasn't the intention of the book, but I found them very funny. So there's a lot here that would really appeal to someone that likes steamy novels, but there's a lot going on, or there's enough going on during the rest of the book that can maintain your interest if that's not your thing. And I have to say, I sort of love this.
It was really great.
It was true to the romance tropes in certain ways. Mm-hmm. Like, it had a sexually experienced man with an innocent woman, mm-hmm. but it was very aware of them and treated them in a smart and funny way. But I never felt like it was self-satisfied in its mm-hmm. humor. It just was fun and, mm-hmm. and just cute and sweet in all the right ways. But it also was really feminist. There were things about the main character that I just loved. She was not an impossibly beautiful, idealized woman. She was seen as valuable mm-hmm. And attractive for her own sake and for her abilities, which was really great to see. And she takes her story into her own hands, which is not something I'd ever experienced with a romance novel. So I really loved that. There were so many passages that I thought were really wise, mm-hmm. even for contemporary women. And I have to say, I cried several times while reading this. So I would definitely read. Yeah, I couldn't believe I loved this as much as I did. So I would absolutely read more of this author. I don't know that I would just grab a romance novel.
Right.
Just
you'd
off the shelf.
Certain...
Yeah, I think mm-hmm. I'd go with things that are recommended to mm-hmm. me, because I know that there are many out there still that mm-hmm. that have this dynamic that I'm not crazy about in them. So I don't know that I could just go willy-nilly romance crazy, but I think that this author, and I know she has some other friends that write in similar mm-hmm. ways, I think that it would be really fun to read more of these. So.
Well, it's interesting because one of the criticisms of historical romance that's published now is that it's not historically accurate, that they're giving women like too much agency that they wouldn't have had at the time. But that's why I like it, because I would have the problems that you said you had when you were younger reading about the women. But I like, there are certain authors, like you said, Sarah McLean being one of them, mm-hmm. who take kind of a modern day sensibility and then put it on top of the historical right. aspect to it. So I think that that's part of why they're so much fun, because they're total escapism, but mm-hmm. you don't get frustrated by, well, sometimes you still might get frustrated by, so, but you know, you see where the people are coming from. It's not totally alien to the way right. we live right now. So I'm so glad you liked it. Yeah. I'm glad you gave it a shot.
Yeah, I couldn't put it down. Yeah. It was really fun.
That's fun. Yeah. So there are three books in that series, and then she has another set of four books in a different series, and they're kind of related. Like the main character in the first book in the other series mm-hmm. makes an appearance in this original series. So they're all kind of connected. It's all the same world.
Yeah.
Yeah. I have other suggestions if you decide. All right. So my last one that I picked for myself out of my comfort zone is Bird Box by Josh Malerman. And Anne, I'm glad you're sitting down, because it's a horror novel that I read, and I survived it.
Oh, my word.
I only read it during daylight hours with my dog right next to me, although she's not particularly ferocious, but I just felt confident that she would warn me if something bad was about to happen.
She's got your back.
She does have my back. So the premise of this is really, really creepy. There is an epidemic that's taking place where people are committing suicide after seeing something. Something undefined. And the reader never knows what the something is. And so that's part of why it's so creepy, is it's like the unseen versus, like, for me personally, that's much scarier than it's some description of an alien or something. Like, I would just be like, oh, whatever, that's not real. But because you're never quite sure what it is, it's a little unsettling. So the book is mainly about Mallory, who's the mother of two children, and she has decided it's time to leave her house in an effort to get to a safe place. And it's about 4 years after this originally started, this epidemic. And so she has been in this, the story flashes back and forth between what's the present day of her trying to make it to safety and then the epidemic as it was happening. But so she leaves the house with these two children, and they all have to be blindfolded during the entire journey because they can't take the chance of seeing something that's going to cause them to commit suicide, or to, it's committing suicide, and there are some murders that were happening prior to the suicide. So like if it was, she could potentially kill her kids and then kill herself if she sees something, whatever this something mm-hmm. is. It's very tense. Like I have this vision of horror of just constant supernatural goings on or something like that. And it's not, it was almost more psychological thriller, because it was mm-hmm. like got into your head. You never know what's actually happening out there, but you just have this feeling of if it's revealed, something bad's going to happen. Yeah. So it was very, very tense. And just the scariness of not being able to just open your eyes and see what's around you, and all you can go by is sound and senses. There's a scene where she's in a house with several other people, and there's a trip outside to the well to get water, which is something they have to do on a daily basis. And that is just fraught with tension, because there's so many possibilities that there could be something or someone right next to you or behind you, and you don't know because your eyes are closed. So it's so creepy. And so, like I said, because of the psychological suspense element of it, I think that's why I could read it and feel like it was familiar. It wasn't totally out of the realm of things that I've read before. I don't know that I'll be picking up any other horror titles anytime soon, but I actually enjoyed reading this. It wasn't uncomfortable in a bad way. It was mm-hmm. like opening my eyes. Ha, ha, ha. I didn't mean to say that. Anyway, I don't know that I'll be picking up any other horror novels, just like you said about romances, that you're going to mm-hmm. go out and willy-nilly grab any horror novel that mm-hmm. I can see. But if you recommended one to me, or if somebody, if I saw really good reviews of something, I'd probably be open to trying it. Mm-hmm. I don't know, it would be my first genre of choice at any moment. But I enjoyed reading it. It was good. It was very entertaining.
Yeah, that's awesome.
And that was Bird Box by Josh Malerman.
I think I really like watching, I call them just scary movies. Mm-hmm. I never think of it necessarily as horror, because to me horror is gore and slasher and things like that, and it's important to remember that that includes tension and having just the fear of something happening mm-hmm. and that's really effective. And I sort of think that that's like my favorite examples of horror are things where it's just an unseen threat instead of something overt. So that's
you would probably like this a lot.
I think that
it's
sounds
sort
really
of The Turn of the Screw. Did mm-hmm. you ever read that by Henry James? It's sort of the same, same general idea, like what you just never quite know what's the terrible thing that's causing all of this stuff.
Right.
So, anyway.
Yeah, I'm going to put that on my list. That sounds cool.
All right. We'll be right back with what we're reading this week. So, Anne, what are you reading this week?
So, I actually read this book at Christmas time, but it's easy for books to fall through the cracks at the end of the year, and I really liked this one, so I'm going to talk about it today. It's called The Visitors by Simon Sylvester, and it's about a 17-year-old girl named Flora, and she lives on a remote Scottish island called Bancree with her family, but she feels like an outsider there, and the island is very isolated, and she doesn't really have a good group of friends at all, so she's pretty much just biding her time until she can leave the island and go to college. Life becomes more exciting for her when a girl that's her age named Ailsa moves to a nearby island, and they get to be friends. But Ailsa's father, John, lives there too, and he is startlingly attractive, but he's also very cold and aloof, and there's just this strange dynamic between him and his daughter, so it's sort of unsettling to Flora. Flora is assigned a project at school on Selkies, which, if you don't know, are mythological creatures that look like seals, but they can discard their skins and take human form. So the stories about them usually involve their capture by humans who fall in love with them and hold them captive, or the Selkies can use seduction to capture unsuspecting humans for themselves. So it kind of depends on who's telling the story of who's the perpetrator of the captivity in this folklore. So Flora begins to suspect that something is strange with Ailsa and her father, and as she gets more into these Selkie myths, she starts to see some similarities between them and the Selkies and just can't really let go of that idea. And for her, the line between reality and mythology starts to become very blurred, and she can't quite differentiate between the two anymore. And at the same time as this is going on, there have been several disappearances by men of the island. They've just disappeared with no trace, and Flora begins to wonder if their disappearance also has something to do with the Selkies and has a supernatural explanation. So, obviously, I love mysteries. Yeah. I don't think that's a secret. But I also really love folklore, and I really love mythology. That's another topic I'm really interested in. Mm-hmm. And so I really enjoy this because they're tied together in a great way. I thought the author does a really good job with the setting, especially. You can, as you're reading, you feel the salt spray, you feel the wind. It just feels freezing the whole time you're reading the book. But he creates a really strong sense of stagnation and isolation through his writing and through the setting. So even though there's a lot that's going on with the straightforward mystery part of it, there's also a lot of ambiguity in the book with how he talks about these characters and the mythology surrounding them. And for me, if they had had a food element, it would have been my complete novel. Yes. So I thought it was really fun.
In your wheelhouse.
Yeah. And this is something that a publisher just sent to me, and I hadn't heard of it. And so it was a really happy find for me. Good. So good. I enjoyed it. It's called The Visitors by Simon Sylvester.
All right. And what I read this week, I was sticking with the out of my comfort zone theme, which is like I talked about. Like I talked about my New Year's resolutions. I'm trying to broaden my reading a little bit this year. So I picked up a graphic novel, which I don't really read graphic novels. And the ones I've tried haven't, even the ones that have been well recommended, haven't been completely successful for me. So I picked up Saga Volume 1 by Brian K. Vaughan, which has been described to me as if you're going to like any graphic novel, this is the one you would like. Not me personally, just in general, like
really?
People.
Okay.
So I thought, well, I'll just start with, I'll go with that one then. So basically it is Romeo and Juliet set in space. It is a epic space opera. I think there are 4 or 5 volumes of the series now, and it is about Marco and Alana, who are from different worlds, literally different worlds, and the worlds are seemingly in a never-ending war against each other. And so they're these star-crossed lovers, and you, at least in this volume, you don't get much of a story of how they met. It starts in the relationship already, and Alana is giving birth to their daughter. And then the story follows them as they try to keep the daughter safe, as other people attempt to kill Marco and Alana and steal their child. So this could not be more out of my comfort zone, all right? It is set in space. It is sci-fi. It's this like space opera, I think. Is that what those are called?
Yeah.
Anyway, it's just not my thing at all. But it was so enjoyable.
Oh, good.
It was, first of all, it's definitely for adults. Graphic novels, I should say, are like comic book in extended form. And don't make the assumption that just because there are pictures that it's for children. This is definitely for adults. The content is very adult. The language is very adult. The visuals are very adult. There's sex, language, violence, everything that you could imagine. Good. So, but it's really actually very funny. Like there are these, it's narrated by the baby telling the story of like what her parents went through, and so there are these kind of funny asides that are thrown in, and there are some funny things about being a new parent that anybody would really, I don't have kids, but I think if you've ever been around babies you would relate to the fact that babies do some funny things and that what you have to do with a baby. So even though there's kind of this epic scope of the story, there's also some really realistic elements to it. And it was just a good adventure story. It kept me reading and wanting to find out what happened next. I think I'm going to get the second one in the series.
Oh, wow.
Partially because they're not a very big time commitment. Right. You know, if it was like an 800 page epic fantasy like you talked about, I probably wouldn't stick with it. But they're very quick. The only thing is that I feel like I was missing out slightly is I'm so drawn to just reading words on a page that having the pictures and the words and knowing in my mind that there was, that was supposed to be a combination that like elevates the story. You're supposed to pay attention to both the words and the pictures. And I'm just naturally drawn to just reading the words and kind of skimming over the pictures. So I feel like I need to make a more concerted effort to actually pay attention to what's happening in the pictures, because that's a valid part of the story just as much as the words are.
Yeah, it's definitely a tricky skill to
It's something I feel like I have to train myself to do if I'm going to read more of this. But anyway, it was fun. It was a fun experiment. Like I said, I'm pretty sure I'm going to read the second one, see what happens to these people. And it was funnier than I expected it to be. And it was the sci-fi part of it was just one element. It wasn't the whole thing. So that's Saga Volume 1 by Brian K. Vaughan.
That's awesome. Good for you for doing that.
All right. So, Anne, let's go back over what the books we talked about today. We didn't do a very good job of repeating the title at the end of each description. So maybe we should say the title and then a three-word description of which book it was that we mentioned.
Okay.
Okay.
So I read Match Me If You Can by Susan Elizabeth Phillips, and that is the contemporary romance about a matchmaker and her sports agent client. I read Mistborn, The Final Empire by Brandon Sanderson, and that's an epic fantasy saga. And then I read Nine Rules to Break When Romancing a Rake by Sarah McLean, and that is a Regency romance featuring an older protagonist. And then what I read this week was The Visitors by Simon Sylvester.
Mine that I read talked about this week were A Peach of a Murder by L.J. Washburn, and that was the cozy mystery about the Golden Girls characters, basically. Sworn to Silence by Linda Castillo, which was the gritty police procedural about the Amish town where there's a serial killer striking women in the area. And then Bird Box by Josh Malerman, which was the horror novel about an unseen force that is making, if people witness it, making people commit suicide. And then what I'm reading this week was Saga Volume 1 by Brian K. Vaughan. If you want to get in touch with us to give us feedback or a suggestion on a topic you'd like us to discuss, you can email us at wellreadpod@gmail.com or find us on our brand new pretty Facebook page or on Twitter at wellreadpodcast. Please rate and review us on iTunes or your other podcast provider of choice. Our podcast is engineered by Adam Farver. Our theme music is Kitten by Paddington Bear. We keep our show notes at beaufortcountylibrary.org/wellread, where you can find a listing of every book we talked about in this episode. If you'd like a book recommendation list tailored specifically for you, please go to beaufortcountylibrary.org/mynextbook and take a brief survey on what type of books you like. You'll need a BCL library card in order to use that service. Thank you, Anne, for giving me my out of my comfort zone recommendations. Yeah, that was a really fun experiment. I think we need to do that again.
Yeah, I loved it.
Thank you all for listening, and happy reading.